Okay, today's daf is daf kuf. We're going to start at the top of daf kuf. Just to review, we had this case where somebody had a Rashid HaRabim going through his field. And he decided to take over that Rashid HaRabim and give a different piece of land for the people to walk through. So he thought that was a good exchange. I'll take back over this piece of land that's within my field and I'll give them a piece on the side. So we said, the first thing we discussed was why this doesn't work, right? And he doesn't get to take back his piece of land. And we said, that wasn't actually the question. We said, Amasha lo lo higio, right? Why he can't, right? First we tried to say that maybe he could, right? The truth is, the question is really, why is he not allowed to switch the roads? So we saw three.
He said that,
no,
that
so why doesn't he get anything back we're going to get today? But the first thing is, why can't he switch it? Why can't he just say, I'm taking over this, I'm taking over this land, giving alternate land? And we said either Gzera Shema, he might give them some crooked path on the side, which would be more annoying for people, or it's only if he gives them a crooked path, or any kind of putting anything on the side is considered, right? Any changes, krovalazeh, rechokalazeh. Then the question is, why doesn't he say to them, shiklu didchu vehavu lididi? Why can't he say, now once this whole, what happens? We say, what's interesting about the Mishnah is, the Mishnah says he can't
take back the new take, path.
He can't keep his own land. In other words, the stuff that can't take over this Rashid Arbin that was through his land and give them an alternate, which we explained. But now the question is, once he does that, what do we say? Let's say you do it anyway, even though you're not allowed. So number one, it didn't work to take over the stuff that was going through your property. That's not allowed. But you might, what would you assume? The other thing it says is, and, right, Masha Natan Natan. Whatever he already gave to Rashid HaRabim becomes Rashid HaRabim. So now he's out on all counts. So why don't we say, okay, fine, I thought this would work. It didn't work. So I'm going to take back my plot that I gave you on the side. I'm going to use that as my private land you can't walk through. And I'm going to give you back the Rashid HaRabim that's going through my property. So why isn't he allowed to do that? Shiklu didchu, you take what's yours. V'havali didi, and give me back what's mine. Right? But it says in the Mishnah, Masha Natan Natan, if he already gave that and opened up to the public, then he's stuck. So what is the Gemara answer? Hamane, who is this according to? Rabbi Eliezer, he. Titania, this is just according to Shitat Rabbi Eliezer on Mishnah. Titania, here's a bright. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Mishum Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbim Shebereru Derech La'atzmam, Masha Bereru Bereru. What do we say here? If many people take over an area and start walking through there as if it was public property, it works. Okay, so this is quite strange, right? So, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbim Gazlanim Ninu. I don't understand. If tons of people decided there's a shortcut right across my street, okay, that leads to a haram. If lots of people decided, you know what, this is a convenient shortcut. We don't want to walk all the way around the block. We could just cut right through here. And they make a public thoroughfare there. That works. What kind of craziness? According to Rabbi Eliezer, these people are gazlanim. They've stolen this piece of land. This piece of land doesn't belong to them. How could they just start traipsing through someone's property and it will actually belong to them? So, Amar of Gidol Amarav, Kigon Shavdalem Derech Botas Sadeh. The point is, it's not a case like, okay, this is, now just pay attention to who's speaking. Rav Gidol now says that Rav, in explaining Rabbi Eliezer, what does he say? When Rabbi Eliezer said that if people just turn some private property into a public road, that works, is only in the case where, let's assume, there was already a path through this person's property to get to the other side, but it got lost. The path got messed up and nobody knew anymore where the path is. So if they pick a new path, that will become a path. Okay? So that's allowed. But it's only, again, you have to remember the chronology here. We have Rabbi Eliezer, who is a Tana, and now we have Rav Gidol, who's an Emora, saying that in the name of Rav, the way we understand Rabbi Eliezer, because otherwise it doesn't make any sense that he would allow people to just take over someone's private property. It must be in a case where there was already some sort of path and they took over a new path. Okay? And then, according to him, so now how does this work back to our Mishnah? According to him, what does that mean? So therefore, Rabbim Sheberu Derech La'atzma Mashaberu Beru. If people just decide, okay, now again, remember the situation. There was some path in this field. There's no more path in the field. So, right. So now they decide we're going to just create a new path. If this path doesn't exist anymore, we're going to create a new path. And they do. That becomes public property, that path. Based on that, we're going to say that's what our Mishnah was talking about. When our Mishnah says that if I have public property, I'm sorry, my own private property, there was a public path going through. And I didn't want that, so I kind of said, I'm going to take over this. I'm going to give you guys a path on the side. So remember, it doesn't work. I can't do that. Whatever that was going through my path is still the public road. But since I already designated the road on the side, it's just like when the public decides to walk through and it works. Likewise, when I decided it was going to be for the public, it works. Okay? And therefore, it already belongs to the public and I can't take it back. Okay, so that's the way they understand our Mishnah. We're going to see, though, there's a different explanation, or there's someone who disagrees. So if that's the case, the Rav Gidol says, Kigon Shabdalem Derech Botas Sadeh, the Gemara continues, we're on the eighth line now of the Gemara, Ihachi Amai Amar Rabba Bar Rav Huna Amar Rav. Why did Rabba, the son of Rav Huna, say in the name of Rav, Ein Halacha Ki Rabbi Eliezer? Wait a minute. Rav Gidol says in the name of Rav, the Rav Elezer is talking about a place, if Avdalem Derech, right, then Masha Biruru, Biruru, right? If they lost the path through somebody's field, they're allowed to create their own. If they create their own new path, the path is a good path, and they can walk through there. But Rav Gidol said in the name of Rav, and Rav Bar Rav Huna says, but wait a minute, I learned in the name of Rav that the halacha is not like Rav Elezer. And now remember, Rav Elezer says very simply, if people decide to just create a path through somebody's property, it works. So when Rav Huna said that Rav said we don't paskin like him, it's because it seems unfathomable that this should work. So, but the way Rav Gidol explained it in the name of Rav seems pretty reasonable. Oh, there used to be a path here. They don't know where the path is anymore, so they make their own new path and that counts. So therefore they say, how could, Rav says, if I know in the name of Rav, Ein Halacha Ki Rav Eliezer, so the Gemara says, then that doesn't make any sense according to what Rav Gidol says. So what do we say very simply? Mandamatneha, lo matneha. In other words, there were two versions of what Rav said. One version is, Rav said, this is totally unreasonable, we don't paskin this way. That was Rav Bar Rav Huna's version. And Rav Gidol had a different version, which is, yes, it's true, it's unfathomable, therefore it must be, Rav Elezer was talking about a particular case, in which case he holds like Rav Elezer and he doesn't go against him. So there's two different versions of what Rav actually said. Now we have to explain what's the reason, according to Rabbi Bar Rav Huna, the way he read Rav, according to our Mishnah, right? We said our Mishnah is Rabbi Eliezer, but if we don't paskin like Rabbi Eliezer, then how would you explain our Mishnah? V'tam amai, mishum to Rav Yehuda, to Amar Rav Yehuda, meitzar shechziku bo rabim asur lekal kelo. So just to make it very clear what's going on here, we had a Mishnah. The Mishnah said, if I give up, right, if I make a new Rashid Arabim in place of mine, it doesn't work. But the new Rashid Arabim is a Rashid Arabim. And we said it's according to Rav Elezer, who says, just like if people decided to create a Rashid Arabim, it would work. Therefore, if I decide to create a Rashid Arabim in my own property, that will work. But Rav Bar Rav Huna said, since we don't paskin like Rav Elezer, he didn't want to read the Mishnah like that, because then it would end up that we don't paskin like our Mishnah. So therefore, he needs to come up with a different explanation. So he takes a different case, which is a Meitzar Shechziku Bo Rabim. We learned this already, if you remember. If two people live side by side, there's a border in between them. And if that border, which is really sort of neither his nor his, and the people start walking through there, asur lekal kilo. Okay, you can't say this is no longer a path. Okay, if hechziku bo rabim, okay, we're going to see hechziku might be part of the operative word here. Okay, because what's hechziku? They have a chazakah, right? So the Rashbam is going to say, what's the case here? When we generally talk about chazaka, what do we mean? That the owners didn't protest. And because the owners didn't protest, so therefore it works. And that we compare to our Mishnah, because our Mishnah is a case not where other people come along, but the owner himself decides to make it a Rashid Arabim. So all the more so, right? He certainly didn't protest. He actually was the one who suggested it. So just like if we have a border here and people start walking through and we don't protest, the both owners on both sides, they can keep that land as public property, at least to walk through. Likewise, our Mishnah, where the owner decided it was going to be public property, he can't change his mind about that, okay? Even when it turns out it didn't really work out for him, right? But once he decided, he decided. The Rimi Gash actually says it's not that the Baalim didn't protest. It's that he actually, the Rabim acquired rights to the property. Okay, he claims that. Rabbeinu Yonah says it's even without permission. If they're machzik, if yachzikah bar Rabim, so there's a bunch of different interpretations. What exactly this case is and then how it would compare to our Mishnah. Okay, now, according to this one, this is a much more simple answer. This is saying there's a chazakah created, right? They kind of own the land. But now the Gemara is going to say Rabbi Eliezer, Rabim b'may kanule. These people, how when they were just biraru derech la'atzmam, it doesn't say they did any sort of kinyan on the property. It doesn't say they had consent of the owner. It doesn't say any of this stuff. So how could, right, b'may kanule, what kind of kinyan did they do to acquire the land? So what are the answer? Bihilucha. They walk there. Just by walking, you create a chazaka. Did you know this? Probably not, right? So now we're going to get into this issue.
For Shvil Yisrael, because everything you're saying is so relevant. We cut through so many private properties, and of course the path goes either along the side or something, but very often if you want to take a shortcut, you make your own path, and you see the worn paths.
Where
you know,
people
you're going
have
through people's private, you know.
That's very interesting. Okay, so here we're going to have it. What's our source that you can acquire something by walking? We're going to see that not everybody agrees with this. Okay. Ditanya halachba la'orka ulirochba kana. If you walk in a property through the length and the width, you acquire it. Okay. Kana makomi lucho, you acquire wherever you walked. Does this sound familiar to you? See where? Divrei Rabbi Eliezer. B'chachamim omrim, okay. Now, for interestingly enough, this is Rabbi Eliezer, the one who said that this was right. Rabim Shaberu Derech, okay, he holds you can walk. Chachamim omrim ein hiluch mo'il klum ad shechzik. You have to actually do a chazakah, work the land, do something to the land that shows ownership. Walking is not sufficient. Amar Rabbi Elazar. Okay, this happens, by the way, very often. For Rabbi Elazar the Amora, it's there just to confuse you. Rabbi Elazar the Amora is explaining Rabbi Eliezer the Tana. Okay, don't confuse them. Amar Rabbi Elazar. My time is Rabbi Eliezer. Dichtiv kum hitalech ba'aretz le'orka u'le'orchba ki lecha etnena. That's what was told to Abraham, right? Le'orka u'le'orchba. Okay? Go walk the length of the land, right? The length and the width, because I'm going to give you this land. And there, what was the point of having Abraham walk, right? This is whether you explain the pasuk literally or not, right? The assumption is that we're understanding this literally. God actually told Abraham, his intent was walk everywhere across the entire land. So as a right, like Shvil Yisrael, exactly. Very, very pertinent. So he said, right, go walk. What, for what purpose other than to acquire the land so that later it could be said, we own this land. V'rabanan, hatam ishum chavivuta de Avraham hu. It wasn't because he would actually acquire the land. It was because God loved Avraham. And he wanted to say to ka'amar le'hachi, he was saying to him like this, k'dei she'enoch lichbosh lifnei banav. Not that there would be some actual proof of ownership, but that if he walked the length and the width of the land, then his sons would be able to later say, look, we own this. In other words, it wouldn't be able to give them real ownership, but it would at least be able to show some sort of, you know, this is our land. This was clearly what was promised to us. Okay. Amar Rabbi Yossi b'Rabbi Chanina. Modim, now here. So we have this machloket. Can you walk or can't you walk? So again, Rabbi Lezer works because he goes l'shitato. He thinks that as Rabim Shaberu Derech Latzmam, right? The Derech is theirs. And how would they kone? Through walking, because that's okay. Chachamim say, can't walk. That doesn't do a kinyan. However, they're modin in a particular case. Modim Chachamim l'Rabbi Lezer, b'shvil shel kramim. Ho'il v'nasa lihiluch, nikne bihiluch. There's certain, okay, a path that goes through a vineyard is a path that's meant for walking. If it's a path that's meant for walking, then the assumption is that the way to acquire it is by walking on it. That's right. Just like you acquire a field by planting in it or doing some sort of action, plowing in it, or some sort of action that shows you're using the land for what it's supposed to be used for. So if you acquire a path through a vineyard, the main purpose of that path was for walking. Therefore, you can acquire it by walking.
You as a public, not you an individual.
No, here it's talking about an individual. If I bought a shvil and I want to do a kinyan on that shvil, if I walk through it, that would acquire the shvil to me. Okay, the path. Ki atu the kamej Rabbi Yitzchak bar Ami. Amar lehu. Okay, there was a case where somebody bought a path, and he said, and then the question was, now we're jumping to another topic within this topic. We're talking about a shvil of kramim, but the question was, how much of the shvil was his? How much did he acquire when he bought this path? So he said, Havule, give to him, kihechi didaru tuna deshavishta vahadar. Okay, what does that mean? It's enough that you could take a load of grapevines, or I don't know, like things that you might carry from the vineyard, and turn around, okay? And you wouldn't hit into anything, okay? You wouldn't be blocked. In other words, the space that I circled around with the stuff on me, all that space would be mine. So now they say, wait a minute, there's a bit of a, I'm going to narrow this a little. Okay, this is only if there were walls up. If there were walls up, then there needs to be enough space that I could turn around and carry my load. If there's no walls, then what? Right? We'll read in a second. But if there's, then all I really need is place for my feet to go. Because if there's no walls around me, then my bundle won't get stuck on anything. And really all I need is the path for walking. The airspace, you know, maybe I need this space up top for my bundle that I'm carrying on my shoulder or my head or wherever I'm carrying it. But that's already high up and, you know, nothing's blocking it. But if there's walls, then I need to have enough space to carry my load through. There's actually some other girsa out there that kind of say it's something a little different, and it's dafka the opposite, that when there are walls, when there aren't walls, whatever, but we'll stick with this girsa. Derech hayachid arba amot. Okay, if you remember, then we had all these measurements. A derech hayachid is arba, derech rabbi mishesh esrei, for the king and for the burial, right? There's ein bo shiur. So now we're going to get more into details. Tana. Acherim omrim, kidei sheyavor chamor b'masa'o. Okay, when it comes to, so this derech yachid, we said, is arba amot, but other people say it's in order to allow a chamor to go through carrying its load. Okay, which we'll see soon how much that is. Am Rav Huna halacha ka'acherim. Rav Huna paskins dafka that it's kidei sheyavor chamor b'masa'o and not arba amot. Okay, I should say vitanu. Okay, they changed the girsa either which way. So there's another brayta that says, "Tayane gola shnei gamadim v'mechze." Okay, gamadim. There's a few interpretations what this is. Sounds like a midget, right? So some people say a gamad is just an ama. It's a, you know, the same a cubit. Other people say no, it's a small ama. If you remember, we learned about small amot and big amot, and that this is an ama of a gamad, right? So it's a smaller length of an ama, right? It's hard for us to understand, right? We call a meter is a meter, right? But an ama was, there's big amot and there's small amot, right? So you could have a bigger ama, a smaller ama. So some people say it's that, okay? Either which way, we'll talk about this in a minute. So anyway, obviously, shnei gamadim b'mechze, it's either 2.5 amot or 2.5 smaller amot, which is going to be less than the 4 amot mentioned in our Mishnah. And according to Rav Huna, we paskin like acherim, who say, kidei shevor chamor b'masa'o. And on the other hand, we have this brayta that says the Dayanei Agolah say shnei gamadim v'mechze. So how do you resolve the fact that we paskin like the Dayanei Agolah and we paskin like the Acherim? So a very simple answer. V'am Rav Huna, oh sorry, I didn't read this part. V'am Rav Huna halacha ki Dayanei Agolah. So now they say, how could Rav Huna have said halacha ki Acherim and he said halacha ki Dayanei Agolah? V'am Rav Huna halacha ki Acherim. So what are the answer? Yidi v'idi chad shiurahu. Okay, the amount of space it requires for Chamor to get through with his masa is this shnei gamadim v'mechze. Okay, 2.5. Derech harabim shesh esrei ama. This, by the way, is very common. This chad shiurahu, it comes up in the very beginning of brachot. Okay, way back. Where they talk about when do we say kriyat shema b'sha'a shekohanim nichnasim l'chol b'trumatan. And then there's 5 different opinions in a braita. And then they try, there's all different explanations, when the ani goes to eat, when the kohen eat their truma, when when they're tahor to eat their truma, when all these different things. And then in the end, the Gemara often says in a bunch of the places, oh, this is the same as that. Now, when you describe things in words rather than in actual measurements, or here we have one that describes it by, you know, an object, the chamor going through with his load, and one that describes it in numbers, it's easy to say, oh, those are the same, and then there's no 2 different opinions. Tanu Rabbanan, Derech HaYachid Arba Amot. Here's another braita that talks about these, and it's going to have more than what we saw in our Mishnah. So the Yachid is Arba Amot, we saw that. Derech Meir Le'ir Shmona Amot. Okay, the assumption here is we're talking about two cities and a road between the two cities that only the two cities used. Okay, as opposed to, let's say, here between Ranan and Kfar Saba, right? Everybody, tons of people use that main road. But if you're talking about two cities where, you know, you only get from one to the other, there's only two cities who drive there, or in this case, walk there or ride their donkeys, or whatever it might be, so then you don't need Shesh Esrei Ama, because it's not a public thoroughfare, it's just for the people of the two cities, and it's going to be 8 Ama. Derech Harabim Shesh Esrei Ama, here's another interesting one. Derech Arei Miklat, 32 amot. Remember in the Torah, they have this whole big thing about tachin lecha derech, make the way so that the person running to the Ir Miklat, when he kills someone accidentally and has to protect himself from the relatives that are going after him. So you have to make it easy for him to get there, right? You have to have signs. You have to make it very clear where he's going. And not only that, but you have to make the thoroughfare very wide so he doesn't get stuck in crowds. Okay, you imagine like somebody running away from, right? You have to be able to get through. So they double the amount of the roads for the Ir Miklat. Obviously, the question is, where the roads from where? Because in theory, anyone could have killed someone anywhere and they have to get to the nearest Ir Miklat, which could be very far away. So I assume it just means the areas around the city that directly lead to the city of the Ir Miklat. Amar Rav Huna, Maikra'a, where do they get this from? Dichtiv tachin lacha ha-derech. Derech ha-derech. Okay, the fact that they say ha-derech with a ha-yidia, that means it must be a bigger derech than a usual one. Derech ha-melech ein la-shi'ur. Why does the derech ha-melech ein la-shi'ur? Sha-melech poreitz gader la-asot lo derech ve'ein memachim biyado. We have this halacha that if the king wants to get through and he wants to knock down your fence in order to make a path for himself to get through, he's allowed to and you can't stop him. Derech ha-kever ein la-shi'ur. From here, we're going to get into some things about kfurot and the ma'amad we'll talk about. Mishum yekara deshichva. So again, they say, which we said before when we learned the Mishnah, it's because of respect for the deceased that we want to have a lot of people be able to be melaveh the mate. If there's not a wide enough path, then people won't be able to get through. Okay, and then people will say, oh, I'm not going to go to the funeral. It's going to be too crowded, and then they won't go. There's an interesting alternative opinion here. Alternate Girsa that the Rabbeinu Gershom Me'or HaGola says, which is that it's not kavod for the deceased, it's not to disgrace the deceased. And the concept is that they're assuming that what might happen, especially in those days, the body might start to decompose. And if there's not a wide enough path, people are going to be crowded around the dead person, and there'll be an embarrassment to the dead person that people can see, you know, or smell the decomposition of his body. And therefore, in order to keep people distanced from the mate, they want to have a wide path so that people don't have to crowd in. That was an interesting, also alternate explanation. Tanu Rabbanan. Here's a very interesting. Hamama Dayanei Tzipori Amru Arba Kabim. Okay, we'll talk more about now. What is this ma'amad exactly? So, in order to do this ma'amad, which we said maybe was similar to our Shura, we're going to see they did something a little different then. The Dayanim Tzipori said you need an area of 4 Kabim, which we said was about 40 by 40 Amma. Tana Rabbanan, Hamochir Kivro, Derech Kivro, Makom Ma'amado Ubeit Hespedo. Okay, so if you sell like a family burial plot, or a path to the kever, or the place where you would do the ma'amad, which we'll talk about soon, or the Beit HaHespedim, Ba'im B'nei, it's interesting, it sounded like people maybe had their own private burial areas with its own area for a Hesped. So if somebody sells his family's burial plot, okay, in his burial area, you can still, you know, when you die, your family members can insist, or if someone from the family dies, you can insist that he be buried in that area, and you can insist that he be able to use the Beit Hesped. And some of the Mefreshim say this isn't any loss for them, really, although the space of the dead person should, in theory, be a loss. But like, let's say, using the Beit HaSped or the Ma'amad, there's no financial loss for them, right? It's not like they're using it all the time. It's a very strange halacha. They say, Mishum Pagam Mishpacha. So some people actually go so far as to say that not only are you allowed to be buried there if you sold it, but that that person can't be buried there because the person who you sold it to doesn't belong in your family burial, your family's burial plot, and that you can insist that he not buried because that's a pgam mishpacha. The pgam mishpacha is if someone else gets buried in your family's burial area, which is very interesting. Wait till tomorrow. You can even get a sneak peek just by looking. You can see all these pictures of how the burial caves looked. Okay, I should tell everyone for Yom HaTzmaut, your misima is to go to Beit Sha'arim today and go see the burial. If you haven't ever been there, that'll be, help you for tomorrow's daf for understanding these burial caves that they had. So again, you have to remember, people buried in those days in burial caves. So it wasn't like a plot next to another plot, but it was a whole cave that where you would bury your family. So some people say you actually can't even bury, even the person can't be buried there. Some people say you have to, if you use the spot to bury, then you actually, I think it's the Rashbam who says it, you actually have to reimburse the person who you sold it to for the fact that you're using the space. You have to pay him at least. But he can't deny you the privilege of being buried there. And that's because of pgam mishpacha, because if you're not buried with your family, it'll be an embarrassment. Tana Rabbanan. Ein pochatim mishiva ma'amadot u'moshavot lamet. Okay, when you do this ma'amad, okay, we'll talk about this. Now we're going to learn it's ma'amad u'moshav. People would get up and sit down and get up and sit down, and you would do it 7 times. Kineged, or at least a minimum of 7 times. Kineged hevel havalim amar kohelet, hevel havalim hakol havel. So how many havalim are there in this pasuk? There's 3 hevels, and there's 2 havalim. Havalim. So, right, the havalim are doubles, so that's 4 plus 3 is 7. Okay, hevel havalim amar kohelet. Hevel havalim hakol havel. Okay, so right, this is a pasuk about how, you know, it's the way you feel after someone dies, right? It's there's no understanding of all of it. It's all, everything's just hevel. How would you translate hevel? I'm trying to think of a good
say futility.
But... futility. Okay. Right. There's no good explanation for that word. Okay, so based on the 7, okay, there's all different people make references to Briat HaOlam, right, that death is sort of the undoing of the 7 days of creation, and, you know, the number 7 clearly has significance here. It actually reminds me of the, in Brachot Kriyat Shema, right, there's 7 brachot throughout the day, and there's a pasuk they learn from Sheva Bayom Hilalticha. There's 7 Hallels you have to do a day, and it's the 7 brachot of Kriyat Shema. There's, right, 2 before Kriyat Shema, 1 after, and 2 before and 2 after in Marv, right? In Shachar, it's 2 before, 1 after. In Marv, 2 before, 2 after, and that's 7 altogether. It almost sounds similar to this concept of the 7. 7 is this unit. And there it's really praising God, right? Here it's sort of saying, where's God, right? And what's going on here? Amar le Rav Acha b'rei de Rav le Rav Ashi. Hechi avdei. What would they do? So Amrlei Kedetanya Amar Rabbi Yehuda Biyehuda Barishona Lo Yu Pochatim Mishiva Mamadot Umoshavot Lamet Kigon. Okay, here's how they would do it. Imdu Yekarim Amodu Shvu Yekarim Shvu. Okay, in other words, what would happen? The people would be walking the family back to the city, and they would say, all of a sudden, someone would call out, "Everybody sit! Everybody stand! Everybody sit! Everybody stand! Everybody sit! Everybody stand!" Okay, so they would do this 7 times. Just to stop here for a minute, the question is, what was the point of doing this? So obviously, like everything, many different interpretations. The one that made the most sense to me was that the idea is they stop and then they, you know, it's a way of saying, like, either you can look at it, like, we can't just move on, right? You have to stop and think about what's going on. Potentially maybe they were stopping to comfort the mourners, and that would make sense if we connected somewhat to our shura that we do, where it's a way of, on their way out, right, people are comforting the mourners. So it's this concept of trying to comfort the mourners, which actually I think is going to link it very nicely to another halacha that we're going to see about it.
7 days of Shiva.
Right, also the 7 days of Shiva. Yeah, there's 7 is a number that repeats itself many, many times in our minhagim. Amrulo, imken, right, like Sheva Brachot, there were the Sheva Brachot of Elim also that connected to the Sheva Brachot Chatanim. Now we don't have that anymore, but also there were 7. Amrulo, imken, af b'Shabbat mutar lasokin. If there's no real hespedim going on here, well then, you should be allowed to do this even on Shabbat. Okay, that's the end of the braita. Achte derami bar papa, hava nesivale l'Rav Avia. Okay, the sister of Rami bar papa was married to Rav Avia. Shriva, she died. Now we're going to see what happens when she died. What did Rav Avya do for her? Avad la ma'amadu moshav. Okay, he did this ma'amadu moshav for her. Amar Rav Yosef ta'a b'tarte. He made two mistakes. Okay, we're going to see Rav Yosef says he made two mistakes, and two other rabbis are going to say he made further mistakes in doing this. Okay, everyone was a little against this Rav Avya. Ta'a she'ein osin ela b'krovim v'hu avad afilu b'rechukim. This is the interesting halacha I thought about this. That it's only supposed to be done by close relatives and not by distant people. And that maybe this connects with the idea of comforting someone. Sometimes people who are distant from you, it's hard for them to provide you with comfort. But at that moment, you're walking away from the cemetery. Who do you really want to be with? The close, right? The close people. And what they say here is the people who are supposed to do ma'amad are the people who are supposed to be, you know, your closest people and not people who are rechokim. And Rav Avya, when he did this ma'amad u'mosha for his wife, he did it even with rechokim, even people who weren't so close to him. So that was his first mistake. His second mistake, v'ta'a she'en osin ela b'yom rishon, v'hu ava b'yom sheni. You're supposed to do it on the day of the kvura. You're not supposed to do it the day after, and he did it even the day after. Abayamar, or maybe only the day after. Abayamar b'ha namita'a. He added in this, he also made a mistake, she'en osin ela b'beit ha'kvarot, v'hu asa ba'ir. Right, obviously, if he was doing it the next day, he wasn't anymore in the cemetery. So he did it in the city, and you're only supposed to do this by the cemetery. Rav Amar b'ha namita'a, another mistake he made, she'en osin ela b'makom shenagu, v'hatam lo nahug. You're only supposed to do it in a place where that's the minag, and he did it in a place where it wasn't the minag in this place, and he shouldn't have done it. Okay, so what's interesting about this is, this ma'amad u'moshav seems to be some sort of custom, right? Clearly it's a custom, because they're trying makom shenagu, makom shelo nahagu, and yet, right, when it comes to customs, things are a little more fluid, right? You can decide how you want to do it, if you want to do it, if you don't. And yet they were very critical for some reason of Rav Avya he wasn't following the rules about how to do this.
It does teach us what the custom was, and it also suggests that it was on its way out if he didn't know it very well.
That maybe people weren't doing it so much, which, by the way, the Shulchan Aruch doesn't quote this as a halacha because, right, or it's, I forget exactly what I saw about in the Shulchan Aruch, but clearly nobody does this nowadays anymore, and it's a minhag that passed. And maybe that's also what you're saying, Ruth, is that clearly it wasn't so nahugin. He didn't really know how to do it. Well, certainly in his area they didn't do it, and that's why he didn't really know how to do it. And maybe the rabbis are saying, if you don't really know how to do a minhag, don't take it on yourself without really understanding what its meaning is, which, you know, many of us do many minhagim where we don't understand the reasons and what the issues are. But anyways, I think it's interesting that they were so critical of him, especially, you know, when people bury loved ones, it's not really a great time to start being critical of them and things that they do. Okay, so I don't know exactly what to make of it, but it's interesting, interesting story. Last thing we have here, Meitive. Now we're going to ask a contradiction on, they say, Amru lo imken af b'shabat mutar lasoken. Right, they're asking a question on the Yom HaRishon and the Beit HaKvarot issue, right? That we said you can only do it on the first day and you can only do it on the day of the burial and in the Beit HaKvarot. So in the source we saw, it said in the Braita, Amru lo imken af b'Shabbat mutar lasokem, right? They said if that's the case, even on Shabbat it would be mutar. V'i amar b'Beit HaKvarot b'Yom Rishon, Beit HaKvarot b'Shabbat, my bai. What would people be doing in the Beit HaKvarot on Shabbat? And why would you say, in Cain, even on Shabbat you could do this? Because who's in the Beit HaKvarot on Shabbat and who's burying people on Shabbat? So what do they answer? Be'ir hasmucha le'Beit HaKvarot amtu ben hashmashot. It's saying that in a case where you buried someone just before Shabbat started, and then as they're heading back to the city, which is interesting to think that people bury right mamash tzemud up to Shabbat, then as you're walking back to the city, you could do the ma'amad u'moshav as Shabbat's beginning. Right, it's hard to imagine in our day and age. Again, our concept of Shabbat is so different, right? Everybody's home by then. Everybody's lighting candles. You know, in those days, it was possible that they actually buried them and then headed back to the city. Obviously, they'd have to be within tchum of the city before Shabbat. But okay, we'll stop here for today. Tomorrow, we're going to get into all sorts of what the burial plots look like and how many in a burial plot, etc. Lots of pictures in the book.